So hello, everybody, and welcome to our NEPT content implementation call for the month of, April 2021. These are calls that are usually the last week of the month. We have a kind of set schedule. The first week of the month, we do our case study calls. The second week of the month, we do our open coaching. The third week, we do our office hours. And the fourth week, we do implementation, content implementation. So what I'm going to start to do with these is have a short presentation at the beginning, just a review of some content or some new content or something to, you know, get you excited about learning. And then I'm going to open it up for questions. And this is where you can ask any kind of questions you want about wherever you are in the content, like clarifying questions, how you're going to use the content. And that's where it may be, you know, in different places, different questions all over the place. So today I was inspired by a coaching call I had today with somebody who had a NutriVal test come back, and there was some mitochondrial things. And I thought, you know, when I explain mitochondria, there's so much to mitochondria, right? And there's so much to reading about them when you're looking at a NutriVal or an organic acid, and there's so many cofactors involved. I thought I would do a review and then maybe adding a little bit more. So it's basically some information that's from the organic acid module, but also from the module 2, which is cellular metabolism and mitochondria. So before I jump into that, I want to welcome all of the new people. We've got a whole bunch of new people here for the first time on these calls. And I just welcome you to the community. I'm looking at doing an orientation or a kickoff, actually. I know we did an orientation last week with the team helping you through, you know, getting on the site, but I want to do like a kickoff where we could just get to know each other and, you know, everybody establish goals and any questions you have of me of getting started in the program, we can do that. And anybody else is welcome to come. If you've been in it, you know, 6 months or a year, that's fine too, or 4 or 5 years, whatever, no matter. So, any particular questions that anybody has before we start, like, you know, about anything that's come up? Yeah, I'm really excited by the showing today. Very good. All right. So what I'm going to do, let me look at my chat. Great to be here, Marilyn. Great to see you here. Lynn, if you can't hear me, check your speaker because everybody else can hear me. Okay. All right. So I'm going to share my screen and I'm going to just run through kind of an overview of cellular metabolism, mainly mitochondria. So it's some of the stuff is taken from some of it's kind of a little bit newish kind of slides based on that material that's in those things. But, you know, when we're working with people, almost everybody's going to say they have energy problems, right? Low energy, whether they recognize it as a low energy or they're hyped up on coffee all day long. And if they stop drinking it, they have low energy, which is very common. Low energy is common. And it can be low energy overall, like don't have the energy to dance or run or do that. But it can also be low energy on a cellular level or an organ gland level. So constipation, what's that? It's low energy in the colon, right? So thyroid problems, low energy to the thyroid gland. So the basis of all of this, there is the cellular health and the cellular metabolism, and every single cell has mitochondria. So what I want to do is go through, some of it'll be a review, some of it'll be like a refresher, like, oh, I forgot about that. And maybe some of it'll be new. Okay, good. And then we'll have time for open Q&A. So as I share my screen, let me go into my PowerPoint presentation. Here we go. And we'll go to, okay. And I'm going to say slideshow from the beginning. All right. And here we go. So let me know that you see my screen. Yes? No. There we go. All right. So there's a lot of things that affect energy, and low energy is one of the most common things you're going to see when people come in to see you. 80% of all people have at some point gone to the doctor to complain about low energy. And most of the Western medicine approach doesn't really address the underlying causes. It's just like, here's some caffeine, you know, get more sleep. There's not a lot that is offered by Western medicine. So we have to look at what is affecting their energy, right? So at the middle of it is those mitochondria. It affects, and there's oxygen and neurotransmitters and hormones and immune system and digestion and detox pathways. And all of these things affect the energy. Today, we're going to focus on mitochondria. Okay, how come I'm not able to move this forward? Okay, there it is. I'm on a different kind of a screen. It's not doing it. There we go. So what causes fatigue? Well, imbalances in oxygen, mitochondria, neurotransmitters, hormones, immune system, digestion, and detox pathways. It's up to us to really understand what's causing it, get to the root cause, and help people to heal from that. And there's usually some sort of metabolic imbalance that's contributing to it. So the mitochondria, they're the powerhouse of the cell, right? They look kind of like this. They have cristae and all that. And in module 2, we go into detail about the structure of the mitochondria. You know, the intention is not that you memorize that. I certainly don't have that memorized, all those structures, but it's that you get familiar with it and understand what's going on with the mitochondria. But basically, its input on one end is sugar and oxygen, and the output is ATP energy. And that's pretty cool, right? People want to have energy. Okay, why is this not? I don't know what's happening today. Well, there you go. So mitochondrial action, the Krebs cycle and other things we'll talk about, produces a lot of free radicals, a lot, right? And we have to have good antioxidant support to be able to diffuse those free radicals, because you can be making this energy and then making all these free radicals that are causing cellular damage. Also, you can have the free radicals that then damage the mitochondria, so you can't actually have efficient energy production. Okay. I don't know what's happening with my slides. There we go. So we have what's called cellular respiration that happens inside of the mitochondria. And I go through this in way more detail in module 2. So, you know, get excited, go back to module 2 if you've already been through it and you want to review it. If you're not up to module 2 yet, great. You'll get it soon. So stage 1 is glycolysis. And basically, I'll show you the picture biochemically of what happens there. The end result is we convert sugar into 2 ATPs plus 2 pyruvic acid and 2 NADHs. Those then feed, NADHs and nicotinamide and adenosine dinucleotide dehydrogenase. And that's basically niacin. It's basically a niacin compound. That gets fed into stage 2, which is the Krebs cycle, the citric acid cycle is what it's called. And that yields intermediates that feed into the electron transport chain and then converts it, and output is 36 ATP. When we're in an anaerobic state, there's not enough oxygen, we can't get through stage 2 and 3. We just get through stage 1. And so it's very inefficient to produce energy. We're only getting 2 ATPs instead of 36. Various things feed into this, not just glucose. Ketones can feed into this. Branched chain amino acids, and we'll look at a picture of that in a moment. Okay, so this is kind of an overview. Now, memorize this by the end of today because we're going to have a quiz. No, we're not going to do that. But this is important stuff, and this is actually a printout from the organic acid test. So the organic acid test is measuring various factors in here, so you get a sense of how well this person's Krebs cycle is happening. Terry, did you have a question on this?
Where does messenger RNA take place? You know, because the messenger RNA is supposed to go from the mitochondria to the nucleus.
That's not involved in this process.
That's not at all in this process.
We're actually talking about how the mitochondria work.
Okay, just within and of itself.
Right.
Okay, right. Thank you.
Okay, so stage 1, this is what I call, this is glycolysis. So fats can come in, and they could be ketones, fatty acids, glycerol, cholesterol even can come in here and can convert it to energy. Carbohydrates, so it's usually glucose and other sugars, and proteins. The amino acids, there's 3 that can get converted to glucose, which are the branch chains. But there's also other amino acids, which produce keto acids. So there's different kinds of ways we can get fuel from the body. So if somebody's on a ketogenic diet, they don't have a lot of carbohydrates coming in. So you may say, how does this work? Well, it's a slightly different process, but mostly in the beginning, but then it all goes down into the citric acid cycle. My understanding is that with the ketones, it actually produces 37 or 38 ATPs rather than 36. In general, what I want us to get out of this is that nutrients are important. Micronutrients are important. Amino acids are important for cellular energy production. So we go through here, we have carnitine that gets converted to acetyl-CoA, or we need carnitine to convert these into acetyl-CoA. We need these B vitamins to convert pyruvate to lactate down into acetyl-CoA. And we need these B vitamins to go from the amino acids, keto acids to the acetyl-CoA, right? And here's one, beta hydroxybutyrate. Does anybody know what beta hydroxybutyrate is?
No.
No? Anybody ever hear of it? Spit it out if you unmute yourself. Okay, so I'll share.
Ketone.
It's ketone. Thank you. It's one of the ketones. There's three different ketones. That's a major one. That's the one that's usually measured by the ketone meter, beta hydroxybutyrate. So they all get in there and they, like I said, there's a slightly different pathway that the beta hydroxybutyrate goes through, but we're going to look at this mitochondrial pathway in the Krebs cycle. Acetyl-CoA then comes down into this citric acid cycle. Why is it called a cycle or Krebs cycle? Blump, blump. It's a cycle. And things go from one to the next, they spit out into the electron transport chain and then parts, they just keep going. So we're constantly feeding this, whether you're fasting or not, you're constantly feeding this because you're breaking down body tissue to go in here. So when we get down in here, if you look at these things that are kind of orangey, these are measured on the organic acid test, right? So you can see how the body is processing in this particular case. So I'm going to mainly focus here on the Krebs cycle because that's the major portion of here. So if we look at the test result and we see that citrate, which gets converted into cis-aconitate, and the cis-aconitate, let's just say, is high, and the isocitrate is either normal or low, we're probably looking at an imbalance of the amino acid cysteine or iron, Fe, right? Because that's what it takes to convert the cis-aconitate into isocitrate. So if you've ever done an organic acid test, who's actually done organic acid tests on clients or themselves? Okay. So if you've done these tests, you know that there are particular cofactors for each of these steps. And they give you like a list of, oh, there might be a CoQ10. They may have this, they may have that. And they give you a list of different nutrients that may be out of balance. What I usually like to do is look at this chart to see, okay, I'm finding that malate is high, right? We need B3 to take malate and move it into oxaloacetate, right? We need B2 to go from succinate to fumarate, right? And then there's some amino acids that feed into that. There's another chart I'm going to show you in a little bit that actually has a nicer little thing because it shows you what interferes with. So there's some... So there's some toxins, and then there's also some metals, heavy metals, right, that can interfere. So these are the things. And in the module, I'll, go through some more detail on these various things. Okay. And also in the organic acid test, we go through this in more detail. But this gives you an idea of how is this person's Krebs cycle doing. So let me show you a little bit more from a perspective. Let's see. Okay, so creating energy, this is in your module. Well, I showed you this one because it also shows you some other things that are produced from, so when isocitric acid gets converted to alpha-ketoglutarate, it produces carbon dioxide and NADH2. And I'll show you in this picture. Let me go back. I think it's in this picture or the next picture. Yeah, it's the next picture. I'll show you in the next picture what happens to the NADH2 and the FADH2. So this is a niacin compound. This is a riboflavin. The F is for riboflavin, compound. So this is just another way to look at it. It's looking at 6C means it's a 6-carbon. So we're taking a 6-carbon sugar and we're moving it around. It goes to 5-carbon, 4-carbon, 4-carbon. And the bonds that are broken is what's giving us energy. So this would be a page of the organic acid test that tells us a little bit about our mitochondrial function. So we have the glycolysis. So in this particular case, both of these are in the ideal range. They're both on the lower side, lactic acid and pyruvic acid. And then here's the mitochondria. It measures these 6 different cofactors in there. So you look at succinic, formic, malic, oxaloglutaric, aconitic, and citric. These are all part of this pathway. So when we look at the picture, I'll show you on the next page, I look to see, okay, so this one is high, succinic, and malic is high. So I'm going to be looking on the chart to see what comes before it. Is it high? It means it's probably not converting from that to the next. And what are the cofactors? And what are the factors that are interfering with that? And feel free to raise your hand at any point and ask me questions. So this actually comes with the organic acid, and it shows some of the cofactors. It doesn't show all of them. It just shows the connection, and it shows some of, like, if there's candida, candida can get in the way and interfere with this kind of process. Like there's oxalates, right? High oxalates and produced by the candida, and that can affect these different pathways. But this next one, the one after this is one I really like. So this is from a slightly different test. This is the organic acid piece from Genova Diagnostics. So the first one I showed you was from the Great Plains. This one is from Genova. And this one shows us the fatty acid metabolism in addition to the carbohydrate, the lactic acid, and then the energy. So it has a little bit more. It mixes in the alpha hydroxybutyrate, the ketones within there. So this is the person's response, and you want to look at it here. What I like about this on the Genova is it actually charts what the person has low or high. So if we look here, any of them that are circled in green are normal. Any of them that are circled in yellow are in the slightly low range. And there's none here in red that there would be in the very low range. So we look here, this person is maybe not processing the for fatty acids real well. Maybe she doesn't have enough fatty acids. There's any number of things. And all of these tests go with you talking to the person and asking questions, understanding what might be going on. For her here, the pyruvic acid is low, the lactic acid is high. They go back and forth between each other. So we want to look at why would that be? But this is where I really focus my attention, because there's so many cofactors and so many interfering factors. So in this particular case, the way I would look at this is I would go to what's low, and then, or I'd have to look at her sheet and see whether this is low or high. Let's see. Yellow. Let me see which ones they are. Isocitric and malic. So we go here, we look at isocitric and it's high. And we look at malic, and it's on the high side too. So when we look here, you want to pay attention to these little red circles that they're telling you what interferes with. So citric acid to cisaconic acid, if there's, I got to make this bigger. I can't see it. Anybody see that? I see mercury, arsenic. I think it's fluoride. Okay. So you look at this, it's hard to see on this for me. It's very small. But basically the stuff that's needed to take citric acid down to cisaconic acid is Fe, which is iron, and GSH, which is glutathione. So if the person doesn't have enough of these or too much of these, then they're going to be in trouble. So this helps you identify what some of the toxic pieces are in this process. Right. So for her, her isocitric is high. So therefore, we're going to look at what takes isocitric into alpha ketoglutaric acid, because it's high. We want to see, is she deficient in B3, magnesium, and manganese? And guess what? She is, because I know this about this person based on the rest of this test. So we're going to support her in foods that are higher in these in these. And also, we're going to support her with some nutrition to help her to move this along. Because anytime there's blockages or slowdowns in this pathway, it's going to result in lower energy production, lower ATP. Then we look at aluminum, right? Does she have exposure to aluminum? I'd be asking her, I have to, I don't think she is, but I'll ask her next time I talk to her. Aluminum, is this related to, does she use aluminum cookware? Does she use an underarm deodorant or antiperspirant that has aluminum in it? Has she been vaccinated, right? Any vaccines will have high aluminum in them. So we look at that and we try to figure out what's causing the slowdowns in the mitochondria. We go around here, the ones in black, they're not actually testing. So we go from succinic to malic, right? The malic is low. So we're looking at malic to the oxaloacetic, which it didn't measure. We don't know what that is, but then that's what's going to take it to the next step. And I'll show you that in another picture. So that's B3. Aha, B3 again, right? So you start to see connections with nutrients based on what's showing up in this citric acid cycle. And then they takes this down into the enzyme electron transport chain, which needs CoQ10. It needs glutathione to get through here. And I'll show you this on a better. If you want, I would copy the, maybe take a picture of this, but you will get the slides to this with the recording of this. But this is a really nice booklet that has how to read the test. And this will give you a lot of good information about the Krebs cycle, about the mitochondria, and how to actually read some of these tests. It's like a 150-page booklet. So it's really comprehensive. And they've changed the test. So I'm going to be re-recording in the modules how to read this test, because this test is, it's changed a lot in the way it's formatted for the better. So then, where's that other picture that I wanted you to see? Oh, okay. So I missed this on. So when we look at here, we have this FADH2 and NADH2. And from the isocitrate, we can shift, we can push down and create NADH2 and send it down into the electron transport page. Same thing with the FADH2 coming from the succinic can come down here. So anything that's going to get in the way of creating a succinic, magnesium, right? Magnesium deficiency, that's going to interfere with shooting these cofactors, these factors into the electron transport chain, which is then going to produce the ATP. And the same thing with the NADH, there's two different places. So B vitamins are super important for energy production. And you can see why when you dissect the Krebs cycle this way. And you get to choose what tests, you know, you prefer. This is part of the NutriVal. The NutriVal from Genova has the organic acids, it has fatty acids, and it has specific nutrients, serum and plasma levels, and red blood cells and white blood cell levels of these different nutrients. So it's a very comprehensive test, and amino acids as well. All right. So, you know, these are really important cofactors for the Krebs cycle, for energy production. B1, B2, B3, and B5. These are the most important ones. In addition, there's other nutrients. There's amino acids you've seen in there, the several of them. CoQ10, which is the oxidative phosphorylation process, which is part of the electron transport chain. There's magnesium and manganese. Both of these activate the alpha-ketoglutarate in there. Iron is a Krebs cycle cofactor. It's just in several places throughout. Carnitine shuttles fat into and out of the mitochondria. So that's what's important to get some of that in. Ribose fuels the Krebs cycle. Lipoic acid is a glycolysis cofactor. And CoQ10 is in the electron transport chain. So this is just a summary for you of the various things. And, you know, we always have to talk to people about what is damaging their mitochondria. And, you know, big old, good old sugar always tops the list, right? And people say, oh, a little sugar. Yeah, but, you know, when you feed people sugar, that's putting pure glucose into the mitochondria, into those three cycles, and it's not giving them the B vitamins. So it's actually, you know, you have all this fuel, but we needed all those B vitamins to take it through, right? And you're not getting that because the sugar is just pure sugar. And so it's going to rob those B vitamins from wherever else they may be. It's going to rob it from the ability to make neurotransmitters, which is super important. So sugar is super important, and it's really important to tell people this. Trans and heated fats, right? Because they produce oxidative stress. MSG, monosodium glutamate, pesticides, preservatives, artificial flavorings, all the things we know are bad. But when you can talk to people and show them that these are affecting your mitochondria are producing your energy. Without energy, you can't enjoy your life, but you also can't have a good heart. You can't have good, strong lung function. You can't have good, strong colon function. Your brain is going to be kind of sluggish. So there's ways that I use a lot of this stuff in the testing to motivate and inspire people to make changes in their life. How do you protect the mitochondria? Well, sugar, providing those good coenzymes, you know, the B vitamins, the zinc, the magnesium, iron, et cetera, lipoic acid, antioxidant support, because the mitochondria create a lot of free radicals. It's just the way it goes. And if you don't have good antioxidant support, your body's trying to create energy. It's creating oxidative stress, and then the oxidative stress damages those mitochondria. Good fats, the omega-6-3 fats, so that you don't have inflammation. Whole foods diet protects. Avoidance of course, environmental toxins. A lot of medications, well, you look them up and you can see a lot of them will say that they affect the Krebs cycle. They affect the mitochondria. And of course, managing the stress. And I think that was all. So, questions? Anybody have questions on that? Yes, Terry, your hand is up. Maybe it's still up, but.
I was just thinking, this is so important what you just put for, you know, to show us and everybody. And you see if I can get my hand down. I think I put clapping instead, but that should go away. And you know what the hardest thing, and I think everybody will agree, that stress thing with the cortisol. Just when I take my, doing the glucose, you know, meter and all that showed me, I don't manage my stress well. I find it easier to manage my sugar, which I gave up, than I do to find it to get my, you know, stress down. You worry about this, you worry about that, and people taking the vaccine and your family when you know some stuff about it, or, you know, I go crazy about that. And you're talking about this Krebs cycle and what can interfere with it. And now it just makes me even crazier because I know other things that can impact it that I have no control over with what's going on outside. Okay.
You don't have control over what's going on out there. Yeah. You have all the control over what's going on in here. So it's not the stressful events that hurt. It's your response to the stressful events, which is why I start every one of my programs, which taking people through the transforming stress. I have a 30-day thing, which you guys can sign up for. You'll get to it in module 5. I forget which module it's in, but you basically it's transforming their stress. Like, how do they do this? It's super, super important. And we as practitioners need to learn to do it. I personally have a lot of genetic SNPs that predispose me to being a basket case, right? Anxiety, ADD, worry, et cetera. And I have had to really work at lowering that, taking myself down off the ledge, basically, right? Because I'm genetically programmed there. I'm the oldest of 9 children, and one of them unfortunately passed away when she was in her 40s of lymphoma. The ones that are still around, most of them are on antidepressants, anti-anxiety medications, or anti-blood pressure, lower antihypertensive medications, right? I'm not on anything. I only took one aspirin or Tylenol over the last 35 years. And that was 6 years ago when I broke my arm and I had to have surgery. And I had to take something for the pain afterwards. That's it, right? I haven't taken anything. So it's so totally doable. But when you have that, if you look at your genes and see if you have any MAOs and GADs and, you know, COMTs and all those kinds of things that would predispose you there. And it means that you have to make a commitment every single day, multiple times a day, to doing some heart math to get yourself down off the ledge, to doing a focused, whether it's 10 minutes, 15 minutes, a half an hour, whatever works for you, meditation. right? To just give yourself that time to get yourself quieted down, because you can't do anything about out there. You can only do it about in here. Heart math works beautifully. You just need to practice it over and over again till it becomes natural. There's some hardwired, you know this because you studied the brain. There's hardwired pathways for immediate response. So you hear something, your body goes to that wired pathway, like, whoa, freak out, right? And you've got to rewire it. So I've gotten to the point where I can do that most of the time, not all the time, but where when something stressful happens, I have practiced the heart math so much that I can stop and, okay, here's what we're going to do. So it immediately, I've rewired it to go, stressful situation, go on a mini vacation, right? Breathe. Not 100% of the time, I wish, right? But a lot of the time. And that's what we really need to focus on with people. Yeah, we can give them all kinds of great nutrient protocols and vitamins and herbs, and those are all really important. But we also need to start with this stress management. Make sense?
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And you know, it's always good to be reminded, because you go through, when going through those 30 days, you feel better. And then all of a sudden you forget, and then you don't add it in. One other question before I go on, you know, I was working with that one person that was a torture victim, and we did the patch, you know, for the
glucose.
Yeah, it was great. She was able to do that. And but her glucose, her husband, they follow the diet of those people who, the 100 days of different foods, they follow the diet of the people who do fecal donations. So that they're, she has an excellent diet. And so her glucose was low, and it never went over 110. Maybe nice. So she's always in perfect area. But pantothenic acid and niacin came up when, I love the assessment. Everyone, there's a vitamin assessment thing that Dr. Rita Marie put out, very good. And that she, with the pantothenic acid and the niacin, came up as issues in those areas that matched each other. So then, is that going to be more, are you leading me towards an organic acid test?
Well, here's the thing, right? We don't have to do tests right away. So if you're coming up with symptoms like that,
right,
how do you, what do you do? Like, okay, she's got some problems with that. That will affect her Krebs cycle.
Yeah, so fatigue.
Right? Exactly.
Mitochondria. So then that's
so what do? You get her to do, look at her diet, have her put it in chronometer so you see.
Yeah, and that's what I said. Her diet is really.
Does she have sufficiency of those? But those are just looking at RDAs, right? So that you have a need, genetic need or whatever need for more. So you can just go ahead and, you know, get her some more foods that have those, or put her on a supplement.
Which is what, right. This is what we did. We went for more foods that had that. And that's what she worked on this month. She feels better.
Good.
And also, we also worked on blessing her food and energetically taking in the food, you know, things like that, because that gave her more energy too.
Yeah.
Doing that. But at the same time, she still has, you know, just these issues with moving her bowels and the fatigue with that. And then there's some.
You can bring it up. You can update it. So magnesium is super important for relaxation response. So go do the magnesium load on her.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Okay, right. Just do a magnesium load. Find out what her tolerance is. Cause you know, 400 milligrams might be RDA. Maybe it's 250. I don't remember, but you know, we usually get people to do right around 500 just a starting point. But so I've had people go up to 1500 to 2000 milligrams of magnesium before they could get function back. Right.
That'll be the next step. Great.
Yeah.
There's one thing at a time for you. We got to go very slowly.
Go slowly. Yeah.
Very slowly, very lovingly and gently. So.
Yeah. And so, you know, niacin is super important for brain function, right? So super important. And they do that a lot with
memory.
Abraham Hoffer did a lot of work with that, with memory and, but also like schizophrenia, right? That people with niacin, also important for the heart, right? Okay. So, you know, you can't go wrong with it. You just go slowly with it because of the flush, right? And you get no flush niacin, you want to get straight flush niacin. But I was listening to a book the other day. I can't remember what book it was, but it's talking about the same way we do magnesium loading and vitamin C calibration, you can do with niacin, only you do the flush response. So you get like 50 milligram or 100 milligram, probably 50 is better if you can find them, 100 milligram niacin capsules. And you start with like, have them take one. Do they get a flush response? No, they don't. Have them take one, you know, and get them up to three times a day. If they can take one without a flush response.
And if they do get the flush response, you have to step back and build up to that.
Back and build up to it. Okay. Yep. But most people, you know, if you go slowly enough, you're not going to get the flush response. The flush response isn't dangerous. It's actually good because it's vasodilation. And it can be helpful for circulation and all that, but you don't, they don't like it. Right. I mean, I don't mind it. It's like having a sunburn. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. That would really help. That's the next step I'll do. Thanks.
All right. So I'm going to look at my list here, and my list says Michelle is next.
So looking at the carbohydrate portion, if the lactate is high and the pyruvate and beta hydroxybutyrate are low, where is the blockage? Because if all the pyruvate is going over to the lactate and then it's
this is one of the pathways I don't have completely memorized. So let me pull it up. Okay. So so you're saying which ones are low?
The pyruvate and the beta hydroxybutyrate are less than the detection limit.
Okay.
But the lactate is high.
All right. So the lactate is high. The pyruvate is low.
So, and so is the beta hydroxybutyrate.
I would say, is she converting her carbohydrates down to the pyruvic acid, which I would look at magnesium here.
Okay, so that's the okay. Yeah.
And the beta hydroxybutyrate, if that's low, I mean, if she's not on a ketogenic diet, you're going to see that low. You're going to expect to see that low.
Okay.
Right. Where I see as a problem, like a lot of people come back with their organic acid tests and their ketones are high, and they're like, oh, I'm like, no, tell me what you're eating. Now, if they're eating a high carbohydrate diet and those are high, then I have to look for why is that, because it's not expected. But if they're on a low carb diet and, you know, they're eating like a ketogenic type style eating, they should see those being high. Yeah. Okay. So I would say that I would look at magnesium in that particular case, because she's not converting her carbohydrate. And then if you want her beta hydroxybutyrate to go up, you do have to focus on a ketogenic type diet.
Okay. Perfect. And then the other one is the low alpha ketoglutarate and low fumarate.
Okay.
And are not detectable, and a low isocitrate.
Okay. So low alpha ketoglutarate, low isocitrate,
and low fumarate.
All right. So now let's look up this part. So she's not converting from this part of the cycle. What's her cis aconitate and citric acid?
The citrate, the cis aconitate, and the isocitrate is low. No,
that one is, but the cis aconic and the citric acid
are normal, like second, third.
Yeah. So I'd say the blockage is here. So this is low here. These are all low, right? So I would say I'd be looking at the heavy metals, and I'd be looking at low iron and glutathione as a potential. And then of course, since her pyruvate is low, she's not going to be putting as much acetyl-CoA into this cycle as possible, as needed. These are normal, but if this was, they may end up being low if we're moving them down through the cycle. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I would focus on magnesium, iron, glutathione, and then I would look at, does she have any exposures here? Because it's the same ones from the citric to the cis aconitate.
Okay, so GSH is glutathione.
Yes.
And the ones in the red are?
They're heavy metals, and is it fluoride, mercury, arsenic, and SB? I'm not sure what's SB. Who knows their periodic table?
I don't know what that is either. Okay.
Okay, but I would look at that. It's probably not something that's most likely, commonly, but you know, high mercury, right? Does she have fillings? Does she eat a lot of fish? So there's a lot of reasons she might have high mercury. Fluoride is in the water, so that's easy. Arsenic is really common in decking, like wood decks. They use it as a preservative, and people that walk barefoot outside on their deck, which most most people do, that can be getting in. So you want to look at, do they have those? I mean, you could certainly run a hair heavy metal test to confirm, but I would, you know, I would start by asking those questions.
Okay, great. I wasn't, for some reason, I couldn't sort it. Okay, great. Start at the very top.
Yeah. So if it's not feeding, these are going to be low, right? And then you want to also, if something's low, you want to look behind it. If something's high, you want to look after it. You see what I'm saying? Like if isocitric is high, why isn't it getting converted downstream? Then you want to look at these cofactors. If it's low, then you want to look at these cofactors. Why didn't it get converted to it properly? Okay. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, it takes a while going through these. And yeah, I don't have this. Some pathways I have kind of memorized because I've looked at them so many times that I just kind of see them in my brain. I see this, but I don't remember all the different pieces. So that's why these charts are so helpful.
Mm-hmm. This is a nice one.
Good. That was from, thanks Shanova for that one. Okay. Thank you, Michelle.
Thanks.
All right. So next we have Karen and then, Jeannie and then Karen. Okay. Jeannie.
Okay, I just needed to know, I think you mentioned once that there's a continuous glucose monitor that you can get without a prescription.
Yeah, it's the same one. It's this Freestyle Libre. There's a company called Levels. And if you do drreedandmarie.com/levels, that'll take you to their site. And somebody said there might be a waiting list right now, but last time somebody looked just a few days ago, there wasn't. It was available. It's a little more expensive than if you get a prescription, but so for $400, you get 2 months worth of meters. And then they also have a really cool app. So and then the cool part, the best part is they give you a prescription for 11 refills.
Really?
Like, is that cool or what? So that's really cool. Yeah.
Okay. No, yeah. That's great. I knew that you mentioned it once, but I didn't have it down. So I wanted to.
I was
to
just talking on our coaches team for the ERC program, our interns and our senior coaches. And they were, I was like, I want to find out, can I make a deal with Levels to be able to get that and, you know, provide it for people in Sweet Spot, provide it for people in ERC, you know, make that one of the bonuses for ERC, you know, that I'm looking into that. So I want to see if they have like a bulk kind of thing. Like, how do I do this? That would be really cool.
That would be great. Yes, it would.
It would be really cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So now we have Karen and then Terry. Karen.
Hello. I just kind of wanted to understand a little bit more short chain fatty acids and long chain fatty acids with regard to the citric acid cycle. Just from my, through Genova, I had taken the organics and I was told to take, or it was recommended that I take carnitine. And I guess I just, and I heard too, like butyrate, I guess is something that might be helpful too, but I guess I just don't really have a good grasp on it. Like, so it doesn't have to be super detailed, but just kind of like a general thing, because I'm not understanding that.
Yeah, so short chain fatty acids are important fuel for the colonic lining, right? It's important fuel for the bacteria that produce the bacteria help to produce that lining. So, you know, you want to have a strong, intact lining. And so butyrate helps you produce short chain fatty acids, or is it the opposite? No, butyrate. Let me pull up the another part of this test. Give me a second. It's easier to show you than to explain it. trying to find a sample. Here we go. Let me go here. And I'm going to say sample. Computer has like, I don't know, 40 or 50 tabs open. So, okay, here we go. Let me show you. Here we go. Okay, I'm going to switch share, stop share, and then I'm going to go share screen. I'm looking at my other screen. Let's see. Oh, it's up here. There we go. Okay, so you should see my screen now. You see the GIFX test. And let's see if I can find the short chain fatty acids. Oops, I must have skipped it. I'm so used to the doctor's data is in a different order. Okay, so if we look here down at the bottom.
Could you maybe put it up to 133 or something like that? I'm having a little, thank you.
All right, is that easier to read?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So we have our short chain fatty acids. There's three different kinds that are reported: acetate, butyrate, and propionate. So these guys are important for creating the health of the lining, right? So these are short chain fatty acids. There's three different types, and we measure the percentages of them. So in this particular case, the total amount is perfectly fine. This is actually a good profile here. There's a good amount. The butyrate is in high percentage, is in acetate. The butyrate's kind of the most important one, although acetate is the higher percentage. But this looks good. But if you see that there's low percentage of butyrate or low short chain fatty acids, the integrity of the lining is at risk, right? And that's where Bifidobacter comes in handy to really help support that. That's where something like larch or arabinogalactans can help feed it, or actually supplementing with butyrate or butyrate containing foods to prevent and protect the lining. Does that make sense? So your question is, where does that come in with the Krebs cycle? It's not really. I mean, they may be fuel that would go into the Krebs cycle from the fatty acid side, but it's not really considered critical for the Krebs cycle. The carnitine, however, we would be measuring, let me just go to another page in this test. Here, right? Do I have that? Yeah, let me find, I have the other one open. That I don't have all those pictures in my slides, but let me find. Let me stop share for a second because I don't want to share somebody's private information. So I'm going to make sure I cover up their name. Did you do the Genova or the Great Plains on the test?
The Genova, the organics.
Okay, so this is a Genova. Let me find the page. I'm going to just make sure I cover her name. Okay, it's back here. I'm used to the Great Plains. So, okay, here we go. Now absorption, cellular energy. Okay. They don't actually measure it, but I'm just gonna go to the Great Plains one because I know where the description is. So when we have, picric acid, okay, so, all right, I think I'm in the right place. Okay. So when you go through the Krebs cycle metabolites, let me just pull up the Krebs cycle again. The carnitine shuttles the fat. Is this the one? Okay. Okay. So go back to this picture. Carnitine shuttles fat into the cell membranes. So there's a particular marker. I'm not remembering which one it is. So whenever I'm reading somebody's labs, it's not like I sit in front of them and open their labs. I can do this with blood chem, right? I just sit there and I open it and I've never seen it before. I can explain to them anything in it. But these tests are really complex. And so it's a matter of going back and forth and between them to see where some of things out. And if you also have a GIFX, you want to see how it's affecting the gut flora, especially with the metabolic markers for candida and bacteria. Carnitine, here we go. So the glutaric acid, methyl glutaric, why is it not showing? Hydroxyglutaric, up here, glutaric acid. Where's the glutaric acid? Let me look at this one, the one from the, this one's from Kreb. Okay. So there's actually, it's very interesting to look at the difference between the tests. So this is the picture from the Great Plains, right? You see there's more metabolites here than are measured here. So we go from iconate and then the alpha-glutaric. This one actually has the oxaloglutaric as well. And this one doesn't. This one has the ketoglutaric. So, I mean, it's in the same ballpark, so to speak, and probably has similar cofactors. But the carnitine is related to high methyl glutaric. So somewhere in this glutaric area, meaning that they're not converting downstream. So when I look at this one, if I look at the glutaric, if that's high, it's not converting downstream into succinic, right? So I'd be looking at some of these cofactors. Does that make sense? I wish there was one test that showed everything.
Right.
It gets confusing, especially if you're used to doing one and then you switch to another, which I almost always do the Great Plains, but this particular person had the full NutriVal, which has the Genova. The other thing with carnitine, let's see where else carnitine is, hydroxyglutaric. Yeah, so it's in this area of the glutaric again. Going down to succinic. Let's see if there's anything else.
Because like the way that the markers, like how they were grouped, you know, there was some of the, it seemed like they had some of the cofactors like under the heading, you know, I'm assuming that's what those were.
Well, if you look, all right, let's see. Can you see, let me make sure her name is not on here. I don't think it is. Just don't let me scroll. Let me change my share and I'll go back to here. So this is how they list the metabolites, what's found, cellular mitochondria, adipic, suberic, pyruvic, lactic. There's the hydroxybutyrate, citric. So they list them here. But then usually it's in the explanations that you have to go to really get the full picture. So if you go here into this booklet that I gave you the link for,
oh, okay.
Right, it's 150 pages long, right? So if you look at this, the mitochondrial markers, it explains everything and it shows you the pictures and takes you through what the various pieces mean. Right. And I will admit to every single time I go through one of these, I go back through the explanations. It's just, you know, it's hard to memorize all this stuff. You memorize the big picture, but the little details, it's really helpful to be able to have a guide and explain what it is. So here's the hydroxybutyric, and it goes through each of these in a lot of detail, and it'll tell you what the cofactors, does it need carnitine, et cetera, et cetera. Does that make sense?
Yes. Well, because like some of the, well, like even that chart that shows the three stages, I don't, the last one is the electron transport chain.
This one.
So like, yeah, but like, I mean, I, you know, if you'd look at that one or the, you know, well, more the one that you gave us, I mean, with the three stages, I mean, I wouldn't have known or wouldn't even have thought that carnitine would have been something that would have been, you know, kind of needed to support because.
Yeah, it's not listing it on the chart.
Right. You know, right. And then, you know, too, with some of these heavy metals, you know, from my HTMA, you know, I didn't have a lot of them show up, or they showed up on the lower end. And, you know, I was, you know, taught that that you need to have balance between, you know, basically the things that control your ion channels, and, you know, like your magnesium, sodium, potassium, and calcium, if I said four. And they said that if those are not balanced, then your body isn't going to even start pushing them out. Some of those heavy metals. So for me, I get confused because it's like, okay, well, you know, where do we start? Because it's like, you know, so many layers of things are wrong. Okay. So they're not, you know, the hydrochloric acid is low, you know, and they're not assimilating everything very well, even when they're taking, you know, and I'm just like, it's just,
yeah,
it's many things. And I'm like, well, you know, like for me, I have issues with copper toxicity. So, you know, so because of that, I'm very, that's one of the things that causes me to be very sensitive to chemicals.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, well, I have all these significant deficiencies. And then it's like, you know, I mean, I honestly, a lot of times don't even have energy to even follow some of the things that is recommended. And it's like, you know, it's, so I'm trying to figure out in my head, if I'm, you know, having energy issues, and even what I'm being told isn't that dramatic of things to do, you know, and like, how do you, I don't know how to follow something when you literally don't have the energy to follow stuff. Like, that's
when you say follow stuff, do you mean follow this understanding of pathways, or follow
the recommendations? Follow the recommendations. So I'm trying to go through and be consistent in what was recommended. And I am just having a hard time because some days, you know, my energy is going to be better than others, you know, and I, you know, part of me feels bad because I haven't been able to follow through. But then I'm doing literally the best I can with the energy that I have, even though I am starting to support this stuff. So it's frustrating, yeah, and confusing, and, you know, and I'm like, ay, ay, ay. So,
yeah, I hear you. And it's kind of vague. So I don't know, what are you most having trouble following? What is it that you don't have the energy to follow? Is it taking supplements? Is it exercising? Is it chewing your food?
Is it dietary? Well, So
taking supplements.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the other thing too is like, you know, from my blood spot fatty acid, you know, I really had to kind of do a lot more shift in what I was, the things that I was eating. And I know for me, like I don't hear people say this, but it makes more sense to me. like, I know we always use the word smoothie a lot. Well, to me, like, it makes me understand it more when it's like, okay, you're going to have a raw food smoothie. Like, that makes more sense to me. So, like, I'm not used to drinking my meals. I'm used to just chewing, and within 10, 15 minutes, maybe 20, I'm done. Where sometimes with the smoothies, it takes a very long time for me to finish them for some reason.
Well, because there's more food in a smoothie, right? I find it the opposite. If I'm trying to eat the amount of food I put, like this is a 32 ouncer that it, you know, I drank in about half an hour, 45 minutes. But if I were to try to eat all the food that was in here, it would take me forever.
Right.
So the goal of blended foods, especially for people who are not used to eating a nutrient dense diet, and I like to call it blended foods or blended soups or smoothie is fine, but people think of fruit smoothie when they think of that. I'm thinking, no, like get as many greens as you can in there, put an avocado in, put some spices, and now you have this drink that tastes good, that's super convenient. When you say you eat a meal in 15 minutes, when it's a lot of veggies, that says to me that maybe you're not chewing enough, maybe you're eating it too fast, right? And you're not actually slowing down, chewing it, leaving it in your mouth long enough before you take the next bite. And that can be causing malabsorption because you're not making it down enough.
Right. Yeah, because it's quite a transition, you know, and I was, you know, when I had first gone on an antifungal diet back in like 2012, you know, I mean, I'm Polish and Italian. So like, you know, any of the normal, well, some of the more ethnic foods that I would eat, I can't eat them anymore. So, you know, there's that, you know, processing the loss of that, not that it's a bad thing to eat more nutrient dense food, but, you know, those connections. So it's like, how should I say this? There's so many things that you need to process when you're making these changes. And I'm not always cognizant of them. And those are sometimes the things that slow me down. And I'm not saying like now I'm having issues because I can't eat pierogies. I'm not, but, you know, but transitioning to the more blended foods is trickier for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't mean you have to just eat that. So my lunch was this and a thing of yogurt, which is, I guess, blended food, but you eat it with a spoon, right? Coconut yogurt. And then a handful of walnuts, sprouted walnuts, right? So I have the combination of chewing. Sometimes I might have this with a bowl of, you know, chia porridge or, you know, something like that. So, you know, a cracker that I've made that's mostly veggies, raw veggies or mostly raw veggies and nuts and seeds that I've made into a cracker that gives me that like satisfying crunch. These are the things that you're going to work through with your clients. And this is where it's not just about reading labs and understanding nutrients. It's really helping people with their psyche part and really helping people to make it easy. And for some, you're giving them one thing, like Terry was saying earlier. She said, you know, the other Terry, now we have two Terrys, gonna get confused. But Terry was saying earlier, her person who had all this trauma, you know, and was tortured, that person, you know, she's giving her one step at a time. And it's always looking at what would be the most important thing. It sounds to me like focusing on the energy piece is really important for you. So you can get a whole bunch of tests back. And I'm not a big fan of running a whole bunch of tests at the same time, because then you're like, where do I start? And you're like, it's overloading for yourself, for you doing it you, but for the client. So where do you start? Like if I get this whole Krebs cycle back, I'll map it out, or an organic acid, or this test is a really big one. I'll map it out. Okay, stage one, we're going to work on this. Stage two, we're going to work on that. And it might be different from client to client based on their chief complaint.
Right.
If they're complaining about really bad gut stuff, I'm going to focus on the gut stuff first. If they're really low in energy, I'm going to look at what's going to give them the quickest boost of energy. Yeah, they have to do all of this stuff to get like fully vibrant and alive and healthy, but where can I start? And for yourself, the same thing. If you're feeling like energy is keeping you from being able to do stuff, then focusing on that. And I would look at the Krebs cycle and say, okay, what's going on in the Krebs cycle? Instead of taking 27 new supplements, which is pain to coordinate, just focus on the stuff that's going to support that. And of course, chewing your food or blending it and eating under, you know, without the stress response. But it sounds like it's stressing you out, which is going to deplete your B vitamins, which is going to deplete your Krebs cycle, which is going to deplete your energy.
Right, which I'm already severely deficient in those anyway.
I'd focus on the B vitamins. I'd focus on a really good source of the B vitamins. I'd focus on foods that are going to support that. You know, the high antioxidant rich foods that are going to protect the mitochondria. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's important if people are, you run these tests, but if they're eating a lot of oxidized fats in their diet, they're contradicting the signals that the body's getting from B vitamins, oxidative stress, right? And it's depleting that further.
So I just had a quick question. So, so generally I was recommended to take my supplements with food. But sometimes, especially on days where I work, like I'm not even eating, you know, three times a day, so that I'm taking my vitamins spaced out, you know, and I'm not always able to eat three times a day. So I'm.
Yeah. So it's really a matter
of missing some.
It depends on the nutrients. So if you're taking proteolytic enzymes for inflammation, those go in between. If you're taking like serratia peptidase as a biofilm disruptor, that's an in-between meals thing. Mm-hmm. If you're taking things, certain things will make you nauseous if you don't take them. Some people, I just take mine anytime. I don't pay attention to food. I do pay attention to don't take zinc and magnesium together and don't take iodine and vitamin C together. Although sometimes right. I mess that one up. But you basically do the best you can, right? So getting them, so when you take the trade-off between taking the supplements at the right time versus taking the supplements at the wrong time versus not taking the supplements at all, right? Ideally, you want to take them at the right time, but taking them on at the wrong time is better than not taking them at all.
Right.
So we can't always be perfect. And I think part of that, and what we're seeing with our clients, is that sympathetic overdrive is the most common cause of their problems, right? They're just in stress mode. And if you stress them out more by having to have all these rules around, you know, and even when I don't give people rules, there's certain people with that GAD gene that are like, well, should I take this with this? And should I take this with that? And they're like, you know, and let's just calm it down. Let's just take every step you take towards replenishing micronutrient deficiencies, improving enzymatic function in the digestive tract, improving the digestive tract, improving the blood sugar. We're not moving to have to go to perfect right away. We're just taking a step, a step, a step. And absorption is super important. You mentioned about stomach acid, right? Getting the digestion working and getting the digestion working properly starts above the stomach. It starts up here. So it's sitting with 30 seconds, a minute of gratitude, heart math, meditation, whatever you can put them in. It's shifting from sympathetic, which we're in all day long, to parasympathetic.
Right.
And then, you know, getting that going, having something bitter before meals. You know, carrying around a little tincture bottle of bitters that you squirt, ideally 15 minutes before. But you know what? If you squirt it right at the beginning of the meal, it's still going to be better than not squirting it at all.
Right.
So letting go of the need to be perfect.
Right.
And, you know, learning to work with people who are going to be, if you're stressed out, what about these other folks who they didn't even know as much, right?
I know. I just go slow, you know,
one thing at a time.
Yeah, it's just, it feels, I mean, I think in general, because people don't understand the change process, I think, you know, maybe the word, you know, resistant is thrown out maybe in a too much.
You mean like insulin resistance or
no,
like?
No. Like people are not listening to what.
Yeah. Don't throw that word out in front of them. It's not, they're not really, a lot of times they're not resistant. They're unable, right? They have some stress programs. They've had trauma. They are having difficulty understanding. They're connected with their emotional attachments to their ethnic food. Right. And so I work very carefully with people to help them to make substitutions. We always talk about swaps rather than elimination, right? Swap. What can you swap? Okay, you're used to eating noodles, right? You love noodles because they're pasta, whatever. You're Italian and you want to put your sauce over it. So maybe you have a really nice sugar-free tomato sauce and you put it over konjac noodles. Mm-hmm. And it gives you that similar kind of an effect. If you're used to eating cannolis, make my chocolate cannolis with whatever, you know, nut seed, high omega filling in them.
Right.
Some chocolate that's, you know, non-sugar sweetened with lohan. Like, we can't like take away all their stuff. We want to substitute. I mean, the ideal diet is just to eat whole foods all day long in a relaxed state, sit outside in nature, right? We can always do that.
Right, right.
Make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Just relax, calm down. It's all going to work. Okay. Thank you, Karen. All right. Terry, wellness with Terry.
So two quick questions. One is, do you recommend a water filtration system for the whole house?
I think that's the ideal. And the reason is that most of the water coming in has got chlorine in it. So you can do the water filtration system for your drinking water and then water filtration system for every shower in the house. But then you think, if you want to take a bath, I realized this when I had little kids, I'm like, I got to fill my bathtub from my shower, right? And then I'm brushing my teeth and I'm like, oh, I'm brushing my teeth. So I just got a whole house filter plus a reverse osmosis and with triple filters in my kitchen. So
what's the whole house filtration system called? What do you recommend?
I don't have one that I recommend. Well, mine got installed 22 years ago.
Okay.
So there's probably way better on that. But the water, if you go on to the Empowered Self-Care site, mm-hmm. and you go into, I think it's under the nutrients, the nutrients section, there's a water section. And then I put in a whole bunch of different recommendations for water filters.
Okay, great.
Yeah. And the thing I was saying earlier, the place you can get it before you even get to the module that I was saying, what was I talking about? Oh, there, the heart math. Same thing. Go into the Empowered Self-Care and go to the stress piece. It's very early on and you'll be able to use that, right?
Okay.
If you're not already.
And then the second quick question is, what's your thoughts on PQQ and the energy? And because I have a B complex with PQQ that I really like.
For some people, it works phenomenally. So it's expensive. It's more expensive than a plain B complex. So it's like test, right? To see if it makes a difference, but it definitely can be helpful.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Michelle, we're back to you.
Hi. So back to the organic acids. What pathways do you look for regarding the nutrient markers and the neurotransmitters? So, okay.
Yeah. So there's the pathways with the quinolinic acid. I think it's on page 3 of the.
Yeah. That's for the neurotransmitters.
That's for the neurotransmitters.
And then the other one with the methylation cofactors and the B complex vitamins.
Right. Right. All of that. That's in the section. Like, are you looking at a Great Plains or?
I'm looking at an organic acid.
Great Plain.
This one says Nordic Labs.
Oh, I have never done that one before. So I don't know the organization of it, but I know that on the Great Plains, there's a towards the back. Usually for Great Plains anyway, the amino acids are last. And right before that, it has pathways. It has the methylation ones. It has a folate one. It has glutathione section. And it has a section with various nutrients, vitamin C, B6, B5, et cetera.
I wish. I mean, there's no pathways. They just.
Why don't you share your screen and let's see if we can find it. I've never. If you can.
I wish I could, but it's on a different monitor, on a different computer.
Okay.
I don't know if I would here.
So they, let me show you what it looks like in Great Plains.
I think it might be similar. It might.
Great Plains organic acid.
Probably the one, if you could go into the neurotransmitters, the ones you were talking about, the
quinolinic,
and
all that. Mm-hmm.
And then at least in this one, the oxidative damage and antioxidant markers are below that, the 8-hydroxy-2-deoxyguanosine.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, let me see. Sample report. Why is it not opening it? Oh, English. I have to choose a language. Okay. All right. So I'm going to share my screen.
Okay.
So this is your organic acid test.
Yeah.
And if you, the first page is all the microbial stuff.
Right.
The second page gives you a picture. The third page has your oxalate and then your Krebs cycle, the glycolic, the mitochondrial, the three pathways, and then the amino acid metabolites for the Krebs cycle. And then the neurotransmitter. So that's on.
Yeah. So that's that's one area of focus because the picolinate was low.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really important to look at because when you look at the picture, there's a picture associated with this one here. You get to see like any of those markers are high.
Oh, that's nice. This test does not have that.
It doesn't?
No.
Bummer. It's in our organic acid thing, but you can take a picture of it. I mean, it says sample report spread over it. You'll have to read through it, but, and it basically maps out the person stuff on here. So you can see that this one had a high DHP PA and the MA was okay. So, but you can see what some of the cofactors are between these.
Is picolinate on there?
No, it doesn't, but I know that it's, picolinate, like zinc.
That's to do with tyrosine, right?
Tyrosine, you know, B6. I was thinking you meant P5P, like pyridoxal 5-phosphate. Picolinate is like if you have zinc picolinate, you can have magnesium picolinate,
right?
That's a more of a compound that binds to, that holds minerals together. So that's not an actual nutrient.
Oh.
Like here, if we go backwards, so we go to the Clostridium markers, then they have the Krebs cycle and we see the Krebs cycle. There's also, so below the Krebs cycle is the pathways of catecholamines. So we have phenylalanine, DOPA. So you can see the B6 there, DOPA to dopamine.
Okay. Say for instance, beta hydroxy isovalerate.
Beta hydroxy isovalerate. That's in the, I thought that was in the mitochondria.
I think that's with, it seems to be complex, B complex vitamin marker.
That's a different report. It's organized differently. Cause here we have the transmitter pathways. So we have all the Krebs cycle stuff here, the oxalates Krebs cycle. Then we have the neurotransmitters. And then we have the folate metabolites, the thiamine and the uracil. Then we have ketones and fatty acids. And this is where a lot of times we see these high, but if somebody's on a keto diet, it's not a problem. If high and they're not, and they have high blood glucose, they may be headed into keto acidosis.
These are in the organic acid portion of the module.
Yeah. Yep. We have a whole module.
Okay. I'm not there yet. Okay.
Okay. So let me see. And then this is it. They actually have one that's called the nutritional markers and they have B6 and B5 and B12 and B2, C, etc. Some of these are functional, meaning that they're showing you like for B2, they're showing you glutaric. And if it's high, then riboflavin would be low, right? Because you need riboflavin to take it downstream. But some of them are actually measurements, ascorbic acid, etc.
And
glutathione, biotin. So that's that section. And then there's detoxification indicators. Then there's your amino acids.
So okay, that's fine. I'll look ahead. When that module comes, and I'll try to sort through that.
Yeah, and you know, you could also look if you just look up the sample, you can read into this, and it gives you these really nice stuff. What I do in the module is I have, like, when you do these tests, they just show you the blocks of text and all the information about it for just the ones that are out of balance. Mm-hmm. So I went through, but there's a sample. I don't remember where I found it. I might've gone through like a whole bunch of them to try to pull them all together. But in the module, I actually give you the text for each of them that describes, you know, what it means. Like, is it a carnosine deficiency? Is it CoQ10 dependent? B1, B2. You do have to be careful that you don't just say, okay, this one's off, so I'm going to give them these vitamins, and this one's off. Then the next thing you know, they're taking 27 different nutrients, right? So we have to just kind of think it through in terms of what's the highest priority. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, yes. And then this is an unrelated question. So for instance, like a bunion.
Yeah.
So that's a, you know, if you went to a traditional podiatrist, they would say, well, you know, wear wider shoes and it's inevitable we're going to end up doing surgery along the way. I mean, is there a holistic way to approach it? Is there something going on with connective tissue and bone alignment, or?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And that's more of it is a structural thing and a biomechanical thing versus a biochemical thing. We always want to look at inflammatory pathways. I'll give you an example. When I met my husband 35 years ago, he was actually on an anti-inflammatory medication for his bunion. And they told him, here's your medication. And, you know, you're going to have surgery someday, but good luck. So when I went through my clinical rounds, I'm like, what do we do for bunions? I brought him into the clinic before I was even in clinic. And I said, I gave him to an intern. I said, how do we work on these bunions? Great. We did underwater ultrasound and got him on anti-inflammatory nutrients. You know, helped him with the biomechanics, put him in flip-flops for a while so that he wouldn't be rubbing it. And now he has like barely anything there. He stopped the medication. It shrunk it down to a point. It didn't go away completely. But there are ways around those things, right? Surgery is not the only answer. And certainly anti-inflammatory medications are not the answer.
Right. So anti-inflammatory foods, it sounded like primarily, and then some, like a shoe with an arch support. Is that with the herb?
I've played with him with the inserts, right? Special inserts.
The orthotics.
Orthotics and stuff. But, you know, he doesn't do any of that now. And now he's 71. And he hikes the trails in the neighborhood anywhere from 5 to 10 miles a day in just a nice, you know, hiking shoe. And he's fine. Every now and then it bothers him, but not much. He doesn't keep him from walking 10 miles.
Huh. So diet, yeah.
Diet and then the ultrasound. We did the ultrasound on him.
Oh, what does that do?
It's an anti-inflammatory, but also it breaks down the scar tissue. It's really good, but you have to do it regularly. Like we did 3 days a week for like 2 months or something.
We did
it underwater because the unit that they had at the clinic had a big head and it's a small area. I have now an ultrasound that has a small head and we don't have to use the underwater, but you can still do it underwater. You put it underwater. So the sound waves transmit underwater and they go from the unit into the area. You know, you do that on fingers and toes and small areas.
Huh. So you buy your own little ultrasound.
Yeah. You can find one easily for like $150. Like I have one that's my clinic. Like, you know, when I was in clinic and when I had my own practice, you know, I did a lot of that and I have like $1,000 ultrasound machine, but for $150, you can get a really nice one. I bought one for my son because he was always spraining his ankle doing skating and he lives across town and didn't want to travel across. So I bought one for him. I taught him how to use it. There's care you have to take with it.
Huh. Okay. So therapeutic ultrasound.
Right.
Huh. Okay.
It's amazing for joints. It's amazing for shoulders, rotator cuff. I had somebody who had been, she was dealing with her foot, was really inflamed and hurting her, and she was limping around, and I told her to get this ultrasound, and she did, and like within a week she was, her foot was like 90% better.
I paid 120.
What's that? You paid 120?
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Remember I told you I had a problem and then I ended up buying the same ultrasound?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. It's awesome.
So this is something you can get on Amazon or something?
Yeah. And or I do something. Search. It's another place. Amazon had them at one point, but let me see if I can find it.
Real quick. Supply.ca.
I think it's Tense Pro. I just got one from Tense Pro.
Oh, my God. Not
Tens, though. Make sure that you get one that's ultrasound because Tens is different.
No, but they have the ultrasound as well.
Oh,
but,
yeah. Okay, yeah. So that's the
point about that. The gel that comes with it.
Yes.
It's a coloring agent.
Yeah, you don't want to use that. They have pure ones that are aloe-based.
Okay, so can you just use aloe vera?
No, it does have to have the kind of consistency. Let me find it. You can get that on Amazon. You can get the gel. So just type in ultrasound gel natural or ultrasound gel aloe. Here it is. Let me see if I can find it.
I bought from spasupply.ca.
Was it LG Med Supply where you got it?
Spasupply.ca.
This one where I've seen them a bunch. They actually had a sale 1 year and I got my son like $104 it was on sale for. Usually they're around 100. Here we go. Tens.
Karima, will you type that in? Spa Supply. I didn't get that last part.
Spasupply.ca.
.ca.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I'm looking for ultrasound. Let's see.
Dr. Rita Marie, this one you can't use it on the spinal area, right?
Here's what I recommend. Unless you're trained and you know the precautions, you don't want to do it on your own spinal area. You're not supposed to go over the spinal cord with it. So you want to stay to either side. Right, that's why I recommend for when I'm recommending it to clients, just do it on the big muscles, do it on your thighs and your, you can, it's very fine to do, but you've got to have precaution. You also don't want to use it on growth plates that aren't closed. So if you have an 18-year-old, 16-year-old kid, don't use ultrasound on them because it can cause the growth plate to prematurely stop, you know. So that's the kind of things you want to be careful about. Receive 20% off your order. Go to lgmedsupply.com and look for it there. I can't find the exact link, but.
LG Med Supply.
Yeah, LG Med Supply.
Wow, okay.
I mean, I tell people all this all the time. And you know how this came up was Karen, she's an NEPT with us. She basically, she's a friend of mine. I've known her forever. And she had a frozen shoulder from having her dog yank her shoulder out of socket. And she was coming to me to get ultrasound. I was working on it and she was getting better slowly, but she lived far enough away that she didn't want to come and do it 3 times a week, which is minimal that you want to do and ideally more. So she went and found one and she started doing it on herself. You know, I had already shown her where to do it. She had done it on herself. She was doing it twice a day within 2 weeks, completely, completely better.
Wow. So
very powerful. Okay. Kidney stone, no, I wouldn't do it.
Ultrasound therapy unit.
Yeah, you find I don't know that I would use it for kidney stone. I would get that done professionally. You know, if there's somebody's gonna, they have to know what frequencies, and it's probably a different machine. That this is very basic. My son broke his ribs, and there's some good indications that the ultrasound at a certain frequency will help the ribs to heal, any kind of bones that are broken to heal. But he wasn't comfortable learning to do it himself. And so we found a local chiropractor there that had it, knew the process, and it helped his ribs to heal much faster. Yeah. Okay. Well, I've got another call to go to. So thank you guys. I hope this was helpful. Yes. No. Type in the chat if it was helpful. Yeah. Yeah. Good. All right. We'll see you soon. We'll see you next week.
Loved it. Thank you.
And welcome all you new people. I'm really happy to see you here. So, yay.
Thanks.
Bye.